Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Little Humans. As always, I'm Paul David, your host and co-founder and CEO of Little Humans, joined today by Devin Geary, who's a senior project manager at a major membership organization here in the UK. We're here to talk to Devin about why we need more trauma-informed tech. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Very nice to be here.
Yeah, very good to have you. And first things first, would love to just like kind of define for the audience like trauma-informed tech. It's not something we've covered before. Like what's like one or two sentence explanation of what that thing is?
Trauma-informed tech is tech that is inspired by trauma-informed practice, which essentially means you understand how to interact and engage with people who have experienced trauma.
That's great. That's well done. There you go. Well, we brought you on today because you're passionate about building and strengthening connections sort of within and between organizations. I've been impressed with some of the work you've done in the Birmingham tech community, Birmingham Tech Week specifically. We know that you came to the UK on a Tech Nation visa. And where's home for you again?
Virginia in the United States.
There you go. I'm just from a little bit up north across the Mason-Dixon line in Pennsylvania. And you've been over here about 3 years?
No, I came for a master's degree in 2017. Okay. Was back in the States 2019, but I moved back just before COVID.
And you're also, we'll call you an expert in trauma-informed tech and theater practice. So that you mentioned TBRI, which is trust-based relational intervention. Did we get that right?
Yeah.
Cool. Very nice. So yeah, very excited. We've not talked about any of this stuff on the pod before, so we're introducing some new concepts to our audience. So very excited about that. First things first, I want to like kind of set the scene for our audience about trauma-informed tech. So you kind of give us a snippet of you know what it is, but at a high level, why do we need it? And you know, what are some of the negative effects of tech that's not trauma-informed?
I think I'm going to be almost like a politician and answer your question, not exactly as you've asked it. So I've really been thinking about this quite deeply the past couple of days leading up to this conversation. And I think the conversation I would love to have isn't so much about trauma-informed tech itself, but rather trauma-informed people on teams building tech. Because I think if you dig into TBRI's trust-based relational interventions, they come out of the work of Dr. Karen Purvis, specifically around children with adverse childhood experiences. And it's all about connect first, then empower, then redirect when you're working with a child who's experienced trauma. The reason I mentioned that is that if you have trauma-informed tech in the wrong context, I think it can move toward manipulation and coercion. So if you have trauma-informed people who are potentially EDI and inclusion advocates and experts as well, I think you move more toward genuinely inclusive and trauma-informed practice. I think that's important, particularly we mentioned COVID a moment ago. Since 2020, most people I know, I think most of us know, have experienced some sort of trauma. COVID itself was global trauma. And the impact that trauma has on the brain is significant. I think kind of common conversations, we talk about trauma in a very flippant way. But actually, if you are able to speak with a neuroscientist specifically, you learn that trauma has a visual and demonstrable impact on the brain and the way that people are able to think and process and function. So I think building tech, because tech is so ubiquitous at the moment and most people have smartphones, most people use some sort of tech on a daily or weekly basis, products and services that account for that trauma are most likely to be effective. I suppose the piece that I'm curious to hear your perspective on as well is when you're looking in a business context, the product has to make money or the business dies. So when we're looking at kind of the ethics behind trauma-informed tech or tech for good more broadly, I suppose this is a question for your audiences to think about as well. Does there have to be a specific answer, or is it more about asking the question and keeping the question in mind as you're developing things?
Yeah, I like that frame of like asking the question, keeping it in mind. Like obviously we know that trauma-informed approaches can like improve tech and like how people are experiencing it, like everything from sort of, we do a lot of work in like user experience research and design, security and privacy, AI, obviously, and machine learning. I think also like the organizational cultures, which you kind of got at in tech companies, like that's a huge piece. And like, who are the people? How are they trained in a trauma-informed environment that influences tech? Obviously, we know about like, you know, the social media has now been documented to have a harmful effect on people's mental health. And WHO estimates that like 70% of people globally have had at least one traumatic event in their lifetime, which is probably low, you know, like there's probably much more than that. So I think we try to think about it, you know, in the clients that we select, like, is there tech causing people trauma? If it is, then we certainly don't, you know, choose not to work with them. It, you know, is it neutral, or does it have a chance that maybe there's some unforeseen trauma that it could, you know, exacerbate in people's lives and things like that? So that's kind of how we think about it. But I mean, I'd be curious to kind of flip the question a little bit in terms of examples of trauma-informed tech that you've seen out there that, you know, are, and I think we mentioned a few in the pre-show prep, but like, are there any that you'd shout out? Like, hey, they're kind of getting this right in terms of trauma-informed technology.
There are two. So one is based in the Midlands. Mm-hmm. It's an ed tech theater company that uses technology. It's called Round Midnight. It's a huge shout out. If you've not come across Round Midnight, do look up their virtual decisions program. That was a theater company that decided to use tech to make an immersive experience that puts the power in young people's hands. So you go into the headset and you live through a day where you're encountering peer pressure, specifically around knife crime. It's terrifying. The first time I experienced it was at Birmingham Tech Week 2019. I kind of went through the whole thing, took the headset off, and the actor who had played the main antagonist was standing right in front of me. Whoa. And I screamed and jumped backwards. So they did a really good job with the acting.
That sounds traumatic.
I wouldn't call it traumatic with a capital T, but it was definitely startling. Had a great talk with him afterwards, but yeah, he did a wonderful job in the performance. And I think the fact that they integrated tech into that has meant that they can take that as an educational tool into schools in a way that their standard kind of theater practice couldn't, because it is immersive. You are in the space. And it was my first experience with actual immersive tech like that as well.
And the goal is to, I'm assuming, like, drive folks away from knife crime to kind of, you know, train them for how to respond in those moments? Or?
So it actually goes more toward the trust-based relational interventions approach. Instead of being, because that's almost coercive, where you're like, I'm training you to do this because I think this is better. Instead, it presents, know exactly how many. I think it's something like 40 plus decision points.
Wow.
And you lift your head to the left or to the right, if you're able to do that physically. And essentially, it gives young people an opportunity to see the consequences of the decisions they're making in the journey. So it's not, obviously, yes, the goal is to reduce knife crime, but it's not dictatorial in the way that it does that. And I think that's the trauma-informed approach. They're connecting with their audience. And they're then empowering the audience, the young people, to make decisions. And then the staff are there to then have conversations with them afterwards. I haven't touched base with them this year, but I know that at one point they had dozens of knives surrendered after the virtual decisions experience. So it is impactful.
So these are individuals who went through their virtual decisions program and then surrendered their knives as a result of it?
It's not even a program. It's literally they put the headset on, went through it, and then at the end of it were like, oh, snap. And then they surrendered.
That's
knives.
An incredible example of trauma-informed tech. Wow. Well, so yeah, at some point, I would love to get them on the show and talk to them about it. So that's you said you had a second example that you wanted to.
Yes. And I might mispronounce it. It's spelled C-H-A-Y-N for anyone who's going to Google it. On their website, they say it's C-H-E-N is the pronunciation. So I'm assuming that's Chen. The content is written by survivors of domestic violence for survivors of domestic violence. And the way that they have laid out their user experience and user interface. The colors are quite muted, not quite pastels, but they're not vibrant, bold colors. The lines are quite soft, and so you don't have the rigid kind of experience when you're looking at it. The font is not bold, so again, it's a gentler kind of experience visually.
Interesting.
The information is presented in a really logical and methodical way. There's a lot of signposting, but it's also very respectful. And it doesn't, something I've been thinking about this weekend is that trauma-informed approaches, they're not about using kid gloves or about coddling people. And I think this platform does a really good job of not doing that and actually doing this in a really productive way.
And that's C-H-A-Y-N?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. You kind of alluded to this in your response to the first question, but, you know, this idea of like there's a connection between trauma-informed tech and like, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there's obviously elements of trauma-informed tech that are very inclusionary, right? That are like getting more people who maybe have experienced specific traumas into organizations, into various tech platforms, things like that. What do you think leaders of organizations can do to create those contexts, to create more trauma-informed workplaces, be they tech or otherwise? Just curious about your perspective there.
Something I've come across in the UK is reverse mentoring, and I do quite like the idea of that. I suppose you have to have the right leader and the right mentor and the right mentoring organization. So specifically with trauma-informed practice, it would have to be done in a really regulated way, I would say, to make sure that you actually have a mental health professional overseeing.
What is reverse mentoring? Sorry, just to, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So typically in a mentoring relationship, the mentor is more experienced or older a lot of the time, and then provides insight and mentoring to a younger or less experienced person. In a reverse mentoring experience, a chief executive, for example, would be mentored by a junior staff member who has experienced trauma in this context, or a lot of the time it happens with ability.
Okay.
So people who are neurodiverse, people who have chronic health conditions or physical health conditions.
Yep.
Or physical disabilities, those conversations can be really productive and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we're looking at tech, I see tech as a vehicle rather than the thing itself. So it is always about relationships. One of the things I like about your approach as well, that it is human focused and that person-centered approach.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's always something that we, you know, sort of try to ground ourselves in. Like, even if it's a client, we're sort of like, okay, where are the people in this? Is it B2B, B2C? Like, that's all very, like, high-minded. But it's like, there's still a person there, you know? Like, if you're selling to the VP of marketing or the CEO or the, you know, junior designer or whatever, like, what are their needs? What are their wants? What traumas have they been through, you know, even as an example? And so we try to, like, ground ourselves in that and, like, the user research that we do and the, you know, branding and all that stuff. So
I think what you just said there about what traumas have the leaders been through is a really significant thing as well. So within organizations, you can have people who have experienced significant trauma who are highly functioning, leading organizations.
Yeah.
And then if there's a situation they are meant to lead through that is triggering, I don't mean that in a flippant way, I mean genuinely trauma-related triggering, that's something to think about. So board structures or whoever the chief executive or the senior leaders report to, making sure that those people also have support is key.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, like, COVID was a good example, or any sort of workplace crisis or mass layoffs. Those are other really good examples. Mass layoffs in tech obviously are happening quite a bit, have been happening quite a bit in the past year. So making sure that the people who are delivering the messages are equipped to be able to do that in a respectful way that accounts for trauma, but also making sure that they're not being negatively impacted themselves by having to deliver those very unpleasant messages.
Wanted to dig in more about the, like, some of the work you've done with, like, Birmingham Tech Week and kind of, you know, the connection between that and, like, trauma-informed practices in the tech industry and this, you know, diversity and inclusion angle. So just curious to hear, like, you know, a bit more about that work and sort of any examples of the work that was done there that you think are relevant for the audience today.
Yeah, I think the one that I'll share about is from 2019, the original Birmingham Tech Week. I learned about Birmingham Tech Week on LinkedIn, was working in Washington, D.C. at the time, commuting a couple of hours per day. If you've ever been to Washington, D.C., you know the traffic is terrible.
Oh, Northern Virginia traffic is no joke.
Three-hour drive each direction kind of situation. So it was definitely a hectic time. And I learned about Birmingham Tech Week and was so captivated by the founder's vision that I then planned a conference and came over and ran it.
Nice.
So we called it This Is Our Brum. And it was about looking at Commonwealth Games, HS2, and this kind of burgeoning tech scene that was happening in the West Midlands and looking at the impact that those three catalysts would have on asylum seekers and refugees, 16 to 25 year olds, and people with lived experience of housing insecurity. So I came over, pitched my little heart out, did like 54 coffee meetings in a week and got people to come to this. And we had about 45 leaders from across Birmingham.
Wow.
It was private sector, public sector, academia, and third sector as well. And we had one person walk in literally off the street, which was the dream. And the whole point of it was to, I think a lot of the time, when these sorts of conversations happen, it's very easy to sit people around a table and say, what do you think about X? What do you think about Y? And we did this differently, where actually we had content, but then we got people up and moving to think through what the connections might have been. And there was an exercise at the very end, modified from something I did with my cohort in grad school, that was very much about meeting other people's needs. So asking, what are you struggling with and how can I help? And doing that with a complete stranger and figuring out how to leverage your network, your experience, your expertise to help that person without looking for anything in return. Everybody did that. And then everybody got to give help to a stranger and also receive help from a stranger. So that was...
That seems like such a core trauma-informed approach of just like, just asking the question of like, what are your needs? What are your wants? You know, and like starting from that standpoint of like, oh, I'm, you know, we're here to serve each other rather than just, you know, let's do a simply transactional piece of, you know, piece of work there. So that's really interesting. Wanted to kind of shout out some other examples of trauma-informed tech that we found in our research and maybe get your reaction to some of these. My strength Bank was one that we found. It provides personalized resources to improve mental health. And so the service is designed to be sort of, you know, hyper accessible and supportive. Trevor Space, maybe you've heard of the Trevor Project. So like they, you know, they have an online community for LGBTQ young people, you know, between the ages of 13 and 24, and kind of, you know, design the platform to be a safe space and a place that recognizes that traumatic experiences often, unfortunately, happen to that segment. And the last is HeartMob. It's a platform that's designed specifically for victims of online harassment. So curious if you've like touched on any of these different spaces in your work and any sort of reactions to those examples.
Yeah, so obviously your team sent these through as examples that you had come across. And I think the thing that I was thinking about when I reviewed all of them was the community aspect. So when you've got community and tech, it's just, it's kind of that conversation around where does it start?
Right.
So it's the Trevor Space from the Trevor Project, right?
Trevor Space.
So that's community focused and it's a digital platform because that is the safest place that these young people can access support a lot of the time. And I just have been thinking quite deeply about that from, again, from a trauma-informed perspective, coming back to my original thought about having people who are trauma-informed in the rooms making decisions. The tech itself is probably more neutral, but it's the question of how is it being used?
Yeah.
How is the platform designed? Is it something that's bespoke? Is it something that is designed specifically for the population? Or is it something that's a little bit more off the shelf? So I think, again, my thinking around this is very much about the community piece and wondering, does the community start first or does the platform build the community? And I don't know enough about these three platforms to be able to answer that question.
Yeah, it's an interesting pipeline question because it strikes me of like, how are leaders in tech or just leaders of any organizations becoming trauma-informed, I guess, you know? And like, it strikes me that there's no clear training system or pipeline to make sure that the tech that is produced or leveraged is trauma-informed, you know? So what would it look like for, is there, you know, like a certifying body that's needed, or is there some sort of like self-organization that the tech community could, and we'll kind of get to this when we talk about Tech Nation, which would be interesting, you know, some sort of organizing body that could ensure or help us ensure, or at least offer training and say, hey, if you're going to be, you know, putting out tech that is going to affect millions of people's lives, it should be trauma-informed. And like, here's some basic principles to lay down. Have you come across anything like that or any like good training resources for getting people into trauma-informed tech?
Not really in the tech space. I think the best trainings I've come across have been run by social workers. And it's not about tech. It's about becoming trauma-informed. I think I am definitely a the glass is more than half full all of the time optimist. So I hear that vision and I love it. But then the kind of slightly more, I've been in my career a little over a decade now, that starts to come in and think about even diversity trainings that we do. How impactful are they really? And it just makes me wonder if, like, coming back to the question you first asked and my response around trauma-informed people around tables, I think that might be more of the place to start with representation. You mentioned Tech Nation. I would almost think that an organization like Common Purpose might be a better place to fit that. So it's not necessarily tech-specific, but a lot of people from the tech space would work with each other in it. Common Purpose, kind of high level for those who haven't come across it before, is an organization that really looks at leading beyond authority and equipping people to learn how to do that. It builds emotional intelligence and cultural intelligence, and it's a wonderful set of training programs with different specialisms. And I would think that something like that, rather than something tech-specific, might be more helpful. Because if you had educators in a cohort with a graphic designer, with a UX designer, with a coder, with, I don't know, a social worker and a doctor, random bits of my brain thinking of that, I think those would be more interesting questions. Because if you have all tech people together, you have conversations that you think are inclusive and are looking broadly at what trauma-informed tech could look like. But if you have an educator say, oh, but actually students have this problem consistently, then that sparks something else. So I do think there's something important in not focusing exclusively on tech, but again, thinking of tech as a vehicle, thinking of a classroom as a vehicle, thinking of a surgery as a vehicle, and finding some sort of neutral space where people can learn together.
That's really interesting because there's two pieces there. One, I love what you said about like the work that Common Purpose is doing to kind of get people to think about leading, think and do about leading beyond authority. That seems like a really core, you know, trauma-informed leadership practice in general in tech and otherwise. And then the other piece there being just sort of like you know, having a general sort of training lens, you know, like on it, like it's a cross-cutting piece, but like just a training lens of, hey, we're going to be thinking about, you know, trauma-informed practices like across the board when we're training leaders of all organizations. Like that's just a good best practice, I think. So I think both of those are keys of like, you know, there's specific things in how you lead and manage, like leading beyond authority. And then there's like a broad-based, you know, hey, we need to be training all leaders of all organizations to, you know, be thinking about trauma and to be, you know, making sure that they're accounting for it in their leadership practice. So you mentioned Tech Nation, and that's obviously like a thing that we share and sort of, you know, we both came through that as a vehicle. So curious to hear your thoughts on sort of where things have landed with Tech Nation. There was a bit of a dust up with like it sort of being. So just curious, like, I mean, I had a specific experience. Like, I'm grateful for the support that Tech Nation, you know, gave to folks like us. And but also, I'm sort of, I think I actually posted something on LinkedIn about how enraged I was about, you know, the changeover, and it got zero engagement, which I found really fascinating. Curious.
Find that and engage with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But curious to hear your thoughts on like sort of, you know, we've done a couple episodes on like the UK tech sector and recruiting talent, and just curious to hear your perspective on that slice of that world.
I was working in the public sector when that happened, so it was, my perspective on it was so interesting. A couple of people who I was not working with directly, but who I knew through work had decided to put in an application for the funding. So we kind of had conversations with them around that. I think the visa process was always so separate from the Tech Nation programs, if you will.
Yeah.
I think the visa process is probably what I'm more familiar with because I've never worked directly in tech.
Sure.
I guess the closest is I worked at a coding boot camp for a little stint. I think the visa application process, I came in 2020, I was endorsed, and they had a changeover in staff and had great conversations with Josh Winfield about what the visa looked like and kind of what immigration looked like more broadly. And then now there's been another changeover. I think the alumni network is probably the strongest bit of that for me.
Yeah. Have you engaged with it much? Because I feel like I haven't really.
Yeah. I am actually an ambassador because I have a master's degree called Shakespeare and Creativity, which I joke is probably second only to underwater basket weaving in levels of
applicability. Come on. That's super useful in the UK. I feel like Shakespeare.
You would think. Yeah. No, it's not.
Okay.
Getting hired in Shakespeare is not an easy thing. I went for the and creativity bit, though, which is the connection to tech. It's about looking creatively and analytically at a problem simultaneously. But because I have this master's degree and I have no direct experience in tech, I get asked sometimes to go talk about my experience with the visa because essentially there was a redheaded American woman. I'm a redhead. Who had the visa. She was not working in tech when she applied.
Okay.
And somebody introduced me to her and said, here, have this conversation. And she said, I did it. You can too.
Got it.
So the joke about representation matters. It was literally, there was a redheaded woman who did it. So I thought, I can do this.
There you go. Yeah.
But I do think that what I have so many thoughts about immigration as an immigrant. I am really curious to see what happens regarding immigration over the next 12 to 18 months.
Sure.
There's a general election coming up. There've just been a slew of local and regional elections.
Yeah.
And I think that will determine a lot about what the next 10 to 15 years looks like.
Definitely.
Yeah. Because immigrating into the UK is a heck of a lot more expensive now than it was even a few years ago.
I mean, that's one thing that blew me away was just like I could clearly see the process for me as a global talent migrant of, you know, exceptional promise. You know, it was very, very techified process and very online. And, you know, I had to pay a lot of money. And like, you know, I was just very aware that my process was very different than people, you know, sort of rocking up on boats and, you know, like finding themselves in, you know, asylum centers and these hotels and stuff where they're stuffing people. And I feel like my pathway was made, you know, quite easy as someone that the government and power in the UK wanted to attract versus, you know, other folks that maybe they're less keen to have in their country. And that's a shame, you know, I feel like in a way. But how can we leverage, how can the government, the future government, leverage tech to, you know, make everyone's pathway, you know, a bit easier, and like especially people coming from war-torn environments, for example, or just all types of duress. So I think that would be a great example of trauma-informed tech, actually, because for me, I just felt like I was actually blown away by how smooth it was, you know, but again, I'm a person from incredible privilege, and just was kind of blown away by that process and how not trauma-informed it was in many ways.
There is, they call it the hostile environment in the Home Office. I think Theresa May implemented it.
Wow.
And I got married very recently to a Brit.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. A couple weeks ago.
That's
great.
Yeah, yeah.
The paperwork process for getting married was insane.
Wow. Yeah.
And wow. I'm on the tier one global talent visa, which is again like the Rolls Royce of visas. And there was a line in the letter that we got back once we had applied for the license that essentially mentioned sham marriage. I said, we'll allow this to proceed for now, but we reserve the right to investigate later.
Wow.
And in some, I mean, of course, it was very shocking to read, but in some ways, I was really glad that I was reading that as well.
Sure.
Because I thought, okay, well, at least I'm white, I'm from the US, I'm incredibly privileged. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm experiencing this as well, at least I can talk about it and some people might listen to the experience because I get a lot of people talking to me about what they think about immigration and those darn immigrants and think, well, I'm an immigrant myself, you know, even though I speak English natively.
Yeah.
So that's been a really interesting thing. I think one of the other questions you had on your jumping ahead a little bit, but about like workplace culture and cultural differences between the US and the UK.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest ones for me is the difference in how we use English.
Mm.
So a lot of people who haven't spent a lot of time in the US and the UK both will think it's essentially the same.
It's very different.
Completely different. The way that we use language is completely different, which means the way that we think is completely different. And so you have miscommunications culturally that you don't think you're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other big things is that my opinion, for what it's worth, is that in the US, our biggest barrier, problem, systemic sin we're rectifying or not rectifying, depending on your perspective, is around race. I think here it's class first and then race, whereas in the States, I think it's race first and then class. And so I've been really intrigued to have conversations about class here. So talking about trauma-informed tech, I worked at a wonderful boot camp in the West Midlands called School of Code. Shout out to them.
Nice.
Their chief exec is brilliant. I think he had like the highest grade point average thing in all of his comp sci and did a PhD. It was brilliant. And he decided to start this coding boot camp to get more and different types of people into tech. And the cohorts look, they represent Birmingham's population and the West Midlands population. And he puts together these project-based boot camps with his team. They're incredible. They're work ready at the end of 16 weeks, but there's a lot of relationship building that happens. Informally. And I think it was such a privilege to be able to work as part of that team for 6 months, I think, because the way that they're looking at tech isn't overtly trauma informed, but actually is. And it's, again, as I said, it's not about kid gloves and walking on eggshells, but it's actually accounting for what people's experiences have been, providing training, providing ways for people to essentially understand how to navigate in white collar environments. But I think also when we're looking at boot camps and we're looking at social mobility, a conversation that gets missed a lot, especially in the tech world, is the difference between being from a working class environment and a middle class environment in the UK. And I think that that's a conversation that needs to happen. Because moving from one culture to another can be deeply traumatic. We've done it from one country to another, one passport to another. So it's easier in some ways for us to know that we're operating in a different culture. And it's in some ways easier for other people to understand that as well. But if you're moving from a working class upbringing into a middle class environment, it's the same, I think, the same kind of principle. We've left our country of origin. We'll never fully fit in there again. We'll never fully, fully fit in here. We're kind of these in between multi-country experience people. And I think it's a similar thing that doesn't get discussed quite a lot.
In a way, I can imagine it's almost like, you know, bewildering, but in a different way, because you're like, you know, I'm moving within a society, but across class differences. So maybe the tendency there is to, you know, assume that the differences are less pronounced than they actually are. And that's definitely one thing I found is like coming over here and just like switching to more of a class lens where people kind of look at me and like, yes, I'm a Black American, you know, mixed race, but like they immediately sort of assign, okay, well, you're American and you're a business owner. So immediately sort of, and my sort of blackness is secondary to that, you know, and that's been fascinating, you know, and then even within that, when I present in different spaces, you know, if I don't like dress like my class or if I don't present in a way that I have to be very careful about how I show up and how I dress. And I really think about, am I going to West London today? Do I need to put on a suit? You know, like all that stuff. Like it's really, and it slowly unravels where I'm like, oh my gosh, that person's posh. That, you know, I take them to be as the same class as me or whatever. And maybe I'm posh, I don't know. But yeah, that's been fascinating. So, and interesting to connect it to the tech angle as well, in terms of like, I don't think we do very much to help people navigate across class differences. In fact, you know, a lot of tech probably exacerbates, you know, class differences. We've had Paul Finnis on to talk about, from the Digital Poverty Alliance, to talk about digital poverty and like how that shows up. So really good of you to flag that. And that connects the dot nicely back to that episode. So
I had a very random conversation with my pastor up in Birmingham a few months ago. And she was talking about how when she was at school, she was a scholarship student at a boarding school, I think. Yeah. And the principal equivalent, I don't know what they call that in the UK, but the person in charge of running the school held events and asked all of the prefects, I think that's what they've
called. Prefects, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Learned that in Harry Potter, so I hope that's correct.
Exactly, yeah.
But each of the prefects was asked to dress for a different type of event. So if it's semi-formal, this is what you're expected to wear. And the fact that he did that has meant that now all of these students are able to navigate these different social spaces.
Totally.
And so it's like Winston Churchill's, that is something up with which I shall not put. Cheeky sentence, cheeky way of saying, well, no, because that's grammatically correct.
Yeah,
it's stupid.
Yeah.
That's something I'm not going to put up with, but that's not grammatically correct. So you have to show you know the rules before you can subvert them.
Yeah.
And I think if the tech world could do more of that, that would be a start to being a trauma-informed workspace, and would potentially mean that more people with neurodivergence or trauma experiences or from working class backgrounds would then be able to more comfortably, more effectively navigate in these spaces.
Yeah.
And then not make the faux pas of not showing up to West London in a suit and people not listening to you, but actually you get into the room, you're sitting at the table, and then you can be taken seriously because you've got the uniform on that you didn't even know was a uniform that you had to wear.
Yeah, and that's good you shout out, but that, you know, that one other trauma-informed tech I would argue to shout out is an organization called WYK Digital that does, you know, they do digital boot camps, and their focus is on like digital marketing, SEO analytics and stuff, but the work that they do is also to give young people the context for like, hey, you're stepping into agencies or like, you know, the digital marketing world and big corporations, and like, what is, you know, what does this look like in terms of like, what kind of code switching, you know, might be asked of you? Not that you have to do it, but it might be asked of you, and to really understand the place of sort of big work in London and Manchester and what that means, you know, very different from a lot of the communities they're coming from and a lot of the social and cultural context they've been trained in. So just a shout out to folks over at WYK Digital there. So yeah, lots of good shout outs today. This has been a really great episode. So where can folks find out more, would you say, about like the work that you're doing, Birmingham Tech Week, trauma-informed tech? We've shouted out, like, what was Around Midnight? Was
Around
one
Midnight,
of them. Yeah, and a couple other good places. But yeah, where would you encourage folks to find out more about this stuff?
Birmingham Tech Week is actually now Tech West Mids. Okay. So Tech WM would be a good place to search. I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find
me. It's a good place as any.
It's as good as place, yeah. And then for the others, just a quick Google search, you can find their website.
This has been a fantastic conversation, and thank you for coming all the way down for this. We always love an in-person one, but we've had lots of really good chat about trauma-informed tech, about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how it finds its way into the workplace. And lots of really good shout outs. I'm glad we got trust-based relational intervention in
me
there.
Too.
And I think the theater piece too, and like the performance of sort of, you know, how trauma-informed work, you know, trauma-informed tech can happen in the workplace, and how the performance and theater angle, I think, is really interesting there. So really grateful for you coming down today and talking to us, Devin. Thanks so much.
I would probably add one last thing.
Yeah,
with trauma-informed theater. Augusto Boal, B-O-A-L, would be the one to look up with kind of theater of the oppressed specifically.
Nice. Well, we'll include that in the episode description as well. And this has been another great episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast by Literal Humans. We've had Devin Geary on to talk about why we need more trauma-informed tech, and really grateful for you joining us today.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Devin. Appreciate it.